might be whether you can open a can. If it's not we, but Moshe said that way. If it's both, if it's so said, it would apply. If it's shash emayim, then it would not apply. But there are two opposite opinions of it. And one of Shlomo Zalman says, even if it's considered to be sosa, it's not called sosa. If it's a can, it's considered unimportant kli. And the Chazanish has the opposite. Chazanish says that the kli when it's sealed is not called a kli. When you open it, you're making it into a kli. That's the worst. Only we have the only saving grace, if the Chazanish is right, perhaps, is the fact that since his time has changed, in those days, most people held on to the kli, they nails it, or took the half of the fish in. As today, everyone throws it out right away, in unimportant kli. And the Chazanish has the opposite. Chazanish says that the kli when it's sealed is not called a kli. When you open it, you're making it into a kli. That's the worst. Only we have the only saving grace, if the Chazanish is right, perhaps, is the fact that since his time has changed, in those days, most people held on to the kli, they nails it, or took the half of the fish in. As today, everyone throws it out right away. We just had a poll. Okay? Good. The Shmiras Shabbos has a very famous psak. He says, you know what you should do in order to open a can? First of all, let me get started right away. His opening line is open everything before Shabbos. Open everything before Shabbos. Why do you have to get involved in machlokes and shailos? Open it all before Shabbos, finished. I agree, 100%. But if you didn't, then it comes to the following idea. His idea is, it's a matter of dispute. What do you do? Which is, first make a hole in the bottom of the can. A little hole. And then, you know, with your can, I'll work on the can, I'm going to take off the entire top covering of the can. Whoa. Hold on a second. What's the basis for this? Simply says, when you do this, there's no prohibition of boneh, even according to Chazonish, because the utensil is not fit for use. It's a hole in the bottom, and you take off the top, it's worth nothing. I don't know why you can't keep nails in it, but whatever, it's all right, but if you don't have nails anymore. This would not be considered to be the category of boneh. Presumably, since there's a hole in the bottom, we're not afraid that it comes and makes some kind of an extra thing anyway, and there's no problem. But I have a terrible problem. What's my problem? Sosa, Gaval. He poo-poos it. Because he holds like a Shlomo Zalman, his Rebbe, who says there's no issue of sosa because it's an unimportant kli. But according to Rav Moshe, it might be a serious matter of sosa. Okay. So I'm not excited about that particular trick, even though it's famous in the name of the Shmiras Shabbos. I'm not thrilled about it, because it may run you into a problem of sosa anyway. However, now is going to come an amazing, amazing point, which was printed by Rav Moshe in that famous shul about lakans, and others have it in different forms as well. I should have the following chiddush. Based on the din in Shulchan Aruch, and Rabbi Shlomo tells you without a source. Aruch tells us in that very same siman Shin Yud Dalet, Siv Ches. You already quoted Zayin Al Ches. Chol Solo Shel Tumorim. Have Tumorim utensils made from kapos tmur, like a lulav, and baskets, and you put dates in it in order that they should become ripe. So Rav Moshe, the Shulchan Aruch says, you may break it. You may break this basket to get at the dates. Why, says the Shulchan Aruch? It's how kozek and Moshe shover and goes in. It's like you crack the shell of a nut. Wait a minute, so they should be able to open anything. No. Only these baskets, which are not kalim gemurim, because they're only made so that the date should ripen in their midst. But it's an absolute kli. Shulchan Aruch already said in Siv Zayin, as you mentioned before, that there is a prohibition known as stiru. Here the dispute as to exactly what's called chosolos, not such an important kli, and what's called an important kli. Says Rav Moshe, he thinks that it's not a function here of how sturdy, strong object is. Rather, Rav Moshe argues, it's an issue of, is it made for one-time use or for off-time use? What's unique about these chosolos shel tamarim, these little baskets they made to have the dates ripened, is they were made for one-time use, after which they would be discarded. Therefore, Rav Moshe argues very beautifully that we don't view these baskets as independent entities, but rather we view them as part of the dates. Although it's not a natural, organic connection, nevertheless, since it was put, it's designated for one-time use of dates, we consider it to be botel, or insignificant, with respect to the dates. That's a comparison of the shell with respect to the content of the nut. Although the shell is put there by Hashem, and the best was put there by human beings, but in principle, is an equation. That's what Rav Moshe writes. If that's the case, Rav Moshe has an amazing chiddush. He says, if that's the case, you may open cans on Shabbos no matter what. As long as a can is meant for one-time use, there's no issue of stira eating. Why no issue of stira? Because these cans are like the baskets described in Shulchan Aruch, although they're much stronger. But since they're meant for one-time use, we consider them to be secondary to their contents and not an independent entity. And therefore, it's considered to be like the shell. Now, I'll go beyond, this is where Moshe says. And therefore he writes in this famous tshuva, although I agree it's better to open it before Shabbos, but since, you know, excuse me, but I personally think Rav Moshe writes it's put up with cans of Shabbos. But you know what, Thomas Chabot should be machmi, or Rishamayim, not that Rav Moshe writes in all, most of his tshuvas in that kind of a language. It's that Rav Moshe didn't realize it, he didn't have it probably, didn't see it, is a Hamish quote from the Rishon, which says so explicitly about that Mishnah with which you began. How do you begin? By quoting a Mishnah, they are permitted to break a barrel to get at the wine or the contents inside. So the Hamish was called the Ran, it's not really the Ran, which says explicitly, it's like a situation of the barrel is like Klipe that goes in the remote. It's like the shell of a nut or the peel of a pomegranate. Amazing. Amazing. This being the case, if Rav Moshe is right, so we can go back and say that, wait a minute, when the Shulchan Aruch prohibited opening up a barrel with wine in it, he didn't mean so. No. Against the Mishnah rule, like the Vilna Gaon. That's the way we like it. Ah, but it's Sif Zayin. Shulchan Aruch speaks about a prohibition of breaking kelim. It's a different story. The case in Siv Zayin is not referring to a situation of a barrel filled with wine or with nuts or with any other kind of or candies, whatever it may be. But rather, it's referring to a case in which you have a on the top of a permanent kli called Shidatev Amigdal, it's a permanent tower or carriage, and there's a seal on top. So if you break that seal, the seal's made from metal or from wood, it's called Stira Gemura. Because you can't say that is considered somehow secondary to the utensil, to the contents, because it's presumably going to be reused, so the utensil itself will be reused. I'm not sure if the top will be reused, but anyway, it's not exactly the same as a can that you just throw out. Or a chavis, which is fairly disposable as well. According to the Ran, you don't even need disposability. As long as it's designated for that particular context. And not only does the Shulchan Aruch, can the Shulchan Aruch be interpreted this way now? There's no violation of stira for Caleb. But the Ramah himself, because he introduces an interesting distinction, whether a kli is big or small. How big is big? 40 saw. 40 saw is sort of a mikvah. That's pretty big. The mikvah you may have seen is bigger than that. Oh, we are very machmir in the shiur of a mikvah. But But in this distinction, we're not going into all the fine print. You look at the Vilna Gaon and the Aruch HaShulchan and the Chavanish, and all the possible comes out, it would seem to come out, that there's no violation of Stira. If there's no violation of Stira, then, as I said to you before, we're in much better shape. The only thing you have to worry about is the Chavanish. Yeah, that's a problem. Chavanish is right, that it's a rabbinian. Then I really can't help you. But if he's not right, and most possible think he's not right, the Shabbos calls him from the Zalman to the Chavanish. Right. If it's only a problem of stira, then it seems that we can build the goal may have been right after all, against the Mishnah Berurah. That we paskin in Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, that there's no violation of stira b'keli. And as far as the prohibition, you may come to fix it, there are Moshe's right, that there's no chance of this happening when it comes to kings. Therefore, let's just give again a brief review one more time. The issue over here is, are you in violation of the issue of boneh or soser? Soser by immediately by breaking it, and boneh, one of two ways. Either you may fix it up later, or if you consider the steel can to be a non-clean, then the opening itself would be in the category of boneh. I think you can run afoul of boneh. So you can run afoul of the soser or boneh. As far as soser is concerned, it's a big dispute. The Mishnah Berurah says there is a prohibition of soser, the Vilna Gaon says no. The simple pshat, the Gemara, that no, the Mishnah Berurah presumably based himself upon the Shulchan Aruch, but we, when we redefine the Shulchan Aruch, maybe the Shulchan Aruch agrees, there's no violation of Soser, and Ramos seems to hold that way as well. So therefore, there's ample ground for somebody who forgot to open it before Shabbos to rely upon the view that there's no steer of the Caleb. And to compound that, in Rav Moshe's logic, that if the can is made for only one time use, it's considered secondary to the contents, and once again, there's no violation of stira. As for the Shulchan Aruch Sifkes, my most solemn Shul Tzvorah. So there really is a very good way, a lot of grounds, to permit the opening of cans from the perspective of soser. The perspective of bone, as in the first problem, doesn't exist. I'm not afraid to make it a pretty clea out of it or a pretty opening. It takes the whole top off. And the Chazanish, now we're in trouble. But again, the Chazanish is. Seem to be rejected by most authorities, and especially in view of the fact that nowadays people throw them out right away, then even the Chazanish might be leaving, because he only expressed his stringency in the facts of his day, that it was kept for the nails or for the contents to be stored there, which both of which have changed today. Okay, that's just an overview of what we've discussed until now. If you have any questions, now's a good time. Yes? Not up today yet. Not up today yet. Okay. Okay, yes. Oh, they're not today either. So far we're sticking to two different fish cans. So far. So, yeah. But let's, yes. Ugly that color. It's like the little jagged edges. You can cut yourself on it. It's so dangerous. That's not a Pesach Yoffe at all. However, there are other cans which have Pesach Yoffe, which I'm very concerned about. We used to call them, I don't know what they call them today, triangle openers, which you used to use for pineapple juice, one of those things. I think that's prohibited. For very clear reasons in my mind. That is what makes a Pesach Yoffe. It's an exact triangle, and it's a spout. That's what it is. It's a spout. You're making a spout on Shabbat as a Pesach Yoffe. It seems to me that that's prohibited. For that same reason, it appears to me, I know that others will argue, but I'm saying my opinion, that those flip-top cans are also prohibited. What's a flip-top? Pepsi Cola, Coca-Cola, you flip up the top, and you drink from the top. Why do I think that's prohibited? That's also a Pesach Yoffe. It's a kind of a spout, which is made especially in a kind of a shape that you can drink from it, and I don't like that at all. In my opinion, if you have to get the Pepsi or Coke, and you can't open that before Shabbos, because it'll all be flat by the time the meals come around Shabbos by day. If you have to, you should do without it. Buy it in a bottle. But if you have to, to my mind, it would be better just to take an old-fashioned can opener, take the whole top off, rather than flip the top.
People say you can open that.
I see people doing it all the time. All the time. I scream it's not allowed, but they'll listen to me. I really don't scream that loud because I don't want to make the bites. But I've been in many places. Well, you know, even, I mean, let's talk tachlis here. Even certain Jewish establishments under supervision, rabbinical supervision, they come to the table on Shabbos, and there it is. Can of soda. You never saw that? No? But they give you the can, what are you supposed to do with it? Chew it? I mean, how would they expect you to put the top off? Which, in my opinion, is not allowed. Yes?
What about the one-time use?
One-time use is certainly a significant consideration. I don't deny it. However, one-time use has less impact when the nature of the prohibition is making an opening. An opening is an opening is an opening. So that, in other words, the one-time use helps take care of the issue of soser, which Rav Moshe, according to Rav Moshe's logic, it helps take care of the issue of bona according to Chazon Ish somewhat, and it helps to take care of the issue of shem yasa the yafek according to the Mustaki situation. But here, it's even worse, because over here you are making an opening, and that opening remains an opening. So although it's true you're throwing the whole thing out, it's a big deal. What can I do? The whole thing's going out into the garbage. But still, it seems to me to be a bit of a problem. I don't think it is a mitigating factor. One of the reasons I don't say anything to those who do it, but it seems to me it may still be a serious problem. I'll bring you proofs shortly. Yes? Open it like only halfway, and you leave the tab on, right? You know, these tabs are supposed to come off. Right, so you leave it halfway attached, then it has to go out, it doesn't come out right. That probably be all right, but you should make sure that doesn't. Okay, that's very inventive. Probably the best way to get it out. Yes, you're right. Very good. Isha Zatzal, in his last line of Chuvis and Aruch Chaim, prohibits opening a milk container. A milk container. What is a milk container? What do you do? You opened up a spout. That's all. The Rav Moshe writes, it's a terrible prohibition of making a spout on Shabbos. And in that little tshuva, he seems to indicate that it may even be a Torah prohibition. The Rav Moshe was very aware of the fact that the milk container is thrown out. Of course, this could be still a difference between milk container and soda can. This milk container, you can, you know, you open up the milk now and you take your first, then you can close, put it in the fridge for a week. Whereas a soda can, after what, an hour? So you can't really preserve things there. Still, it seems to me that it's not so clear that would be a mitigating factor. It's not in a Torah, it may be a rabbinical prohibition. So that's why I don't like any of these spout making on Shabbos. Yes? Someone else opened it. We go back to the rule I told you about months ago, that when it comes to the prohibition, we call Maisa Shabbos, you may not have any benefit from someone who violated a prohibition on Shabbos. That's only if it's unanimously accepted, the prohibition. If there is a view which maintains permissible, even if you don't subscribe to that view, it's almost a legitimate view, then you can have benefit from it after the fact. There is a legitimate view, I mean, I don't understand it, but I saw it printed by the late Papa Rav, the Hasidic of Kila Papa, printed a whole article why it's permissible to open these spouts. Could be based on misinformation, because he writes, you're not really making a new spout, it's a spout there beforehand. And you're just reopening it. Not true. We used to have a milk factory near my house in Riverdale. We used to go in there, and we watched, it was never a spout. They have, it's like this. It's a square piece of cardboard, all the way up. And they go like this, pinch twice, back on top, and that's it. It was never a spout before, never an issue, never. And it's very well sealed. You turn it to cut upside down, nothing comes out of it. I think maybe the facts may got the wrong facts, perhaps. But then I was told, I don't know what the reason is, that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky that South thought it was permissible. Someone told me it was there. When, after Rav Moshe Tshuva came out prohibiting it, someone told me Rabbi Yaakov was visiting in the Philadelphia yeshiva with his son, Rabbi Shmuel Shalita, the Rosh Yeshiva. And someone brought him, it was Shal Shudas, it was in the summer, and there was a milk container there. So someone showed Rabbi Yaakov, I'm ready, are you allowed to open these cans, this container on Shabbos? But the story goes, Rabbi Yaakov said, of course, they took and they opened it right in front of them. It was a man of his convictions. So, I mean, I don't understand it, but there is a legitimate point of view. Something by legitimate, the Gedolei Torah, but after the fact, someone opened it, you allowed to drink it. Yes? I'll jump to conclusions, one thing at a time. One thing at a time. What do you do if you need the milk? The baby has to have his milk. It's simple. You do surgery. That's what I used to do. Take a knife, puncture the bottom of the milk container, comes out like this, into a pot, and you have your milk. That's all. What can I do? That's all the way you can do it. That's permissible. Because that's the worst is so-so, we thought. And we don't even think it's so-so, the way rogue folks can hold. Yes? That's a good question. It's the wrong side. We make mistakes sometimes. They open it up. It's very hard to do that. It's not meant to be open. That's the harder seal. I don't think it makes a difference whether you just have it. I've done it the best. Yeah. Open the wrong side. What's with this thing? Oh. They open it up. And you get to get a good spouse. So I don't do it. Anyway, it argues even worse. That's the stronger seal. It's arguable. Yes? Oh, there's a straw, that's a good bag. Oh. Okay, let's let go. We'll get to the bags later. We're still talking about soda, so we got to start with soda. Most soda bottles nowadays don't come as they used to. But it's sort of making a comeback, and so in the country. They have, it used to be the old candy, when I was growing up, there was only one kind of a soda bottle. It was a narrow bottle, on top it was a little thing, you had the other side of that can opener, and you had those little... Bottle caps! Bottle caps! You know what a bottle cap is? It's a cap, a bottle cap. You knock it out. Everyone assumes that's when they're on Shabbos. I never heard anyone to prohibit that. Never heard anyone to prohibit it. But now, most bottles have what they call twist-off caps. What's the style of a twist-off cap? Someone in this corner over here, the Shmur Shabbos, saying, not allowed. You can't open, but don't leave now. No one's allowed to leave until I finish this in a few minutes. It's coming with a warm impression. Rav Shlomo Zalman's quoting here, I emphasize here, as saying you may not open up a twist-off cap from a soda bottle on Shabbos. Why? Why? Because by doing it, you're making it into a kli. Because until now, before you twisted it, it couldn't serve as a kli. Why? Because you couldn't take it on and off. When you twist it off for the first time, and you make it, you loosen it a little bit, now I'm making it into a proper kli. So therefore, how do you open get to the soda? It's a Shlomo Zalman, a trick. We have before a trick. You take a sharp implement, bang a hole at the top of the cap, and they're rendering it unfit for use because it won't hold any air, and all the zing will come out, and then you get open. That's what Shlomo Zalman says. But I don't understand it at all. Absolutely not at all. I'll tell you why. It seems to me, it has to do with B'nai Brak again. Seems to me that the twist-off cap before it was never twisted had the status of a kli. No less than a can which is completely sealed. It's a different kind of a kli. Before you twist it for the first time, it serves to preserve the fizz in the soda. The same as a tuna can preserves the freshness of the tuna. This is from Shlomo Zalman argued on the Chazanish before. When it comes to the tuna can, I don't see why he somehow says over here that it should have the status of a non-kli, which you're making into a kli. I don't understand it. And I found that the Sechuvi Yachav and Das, about the Osei Shalita writes, second Caliph, that it's called a kli from the very beginning, and you may remove it on Shabbos. You remove it for the first time on Shabbos. If you say it's permissible, I would not make a hole in it. Because making a hole may have a status of what? Sosa, even though he said before Sosa may not be so bad, but why get involved in it? I think that strictly speaking it's permissible to open the twist-off cap on Shabbos. Better before, of course better before. You just open and close, it'll keep the fizz in, just close it very tight. No problem. Alternative are those who prohibit this because what we call makat or patish. Ooh, wow. A whole new category. We just talked about bone and sosa. Makat or patish. Where did I see this? An interesting book called Shomer Shabbos Kados. A little tiny pamphlet written some by someone who lives now in Geula Meishar. He went to JSS many, many years ago. Talmud by Yeshiva. And he made it big. Now it was a character or something like that, the Haredis. And he wrote a beautiful, beautiful country called Shomer Shabbos Kados. He went to Mismaka the Patish. And he said, even though it could have been used a little beforehand, it's still called Maka the Patish. And he brings the proof. The Mishnah Berurah said, if I have a needle which could be used for sewing, but it's a little bit crooked. A little bit crooked, but you can still sew with it. And I straighten it out on Shabbos and Yom Tov. That's a violation of Makat HaPatish. Here too, even though the top was somehow somewhat usable or close to be usable before, if I twist it over the first time, it's labeled as Makat HaPatish. It seems to me this proof is not a good proof for the following reason. The needle which is crooked, which is bent, that's considered broken. It's a broken needle, not a perfect needle. However, the top of the Pepsi Cola bottle, that's not broken. Go to the store, it's down the block, you see thousands of them. They're all broken. They're not broken, they're meant to be that way. They're meant to preserve the fizz, to preserve the freshness, the carbonation. It's not considered to be broken. But it's no broken, it's not broken, so you can't fix it, as they say. So then it's not called Makat HaPatish, that's what I think. P.S. When I want to leave, there's a new volume called Shmiras Shabbos Chelek Gimel. Never heard of it. Very thin volume. It's just mostly, it has one major topic, which I forgot now what it is, I forgot already. And then there's a lot of emendations and corrections that Shlomo Zalman wrote. He quoted me this way, I meant this, I changed my mind, I meant this. So, well, that's what most of the book is about. Well, guess what? Finally, I was vindicated. After 15 years, I already printed an article about that. I don't see what Shlomo Zalman is saying. Well, guess what? He said, he came around. Because I wrote a letter to Rav Neubert about this already 13 years ago. Long Shabbos. I said, what are you doing? I wrote a letter, why? He goes back, I don't know what he answered me. Now Shlomo Zalman apparently had thought better of it. He writes, he thinks it's also good. For that reason, you're not making it into a clue. It's always a clue. I still don't do it before Shabbos. But that's the chatchil. In my shul, for example, they have soda, which they serve, so sometimes the committee is shalashudas, they open it before Shabbos. But if they don't, so I think it's because I think it's permissible. It's always better to do it before Shabbos. Why have any fights? Yes. Curved metal, plastic, it's detached, it's not detached. I don't see the difference of any of these things. Because all us are all Muslim, I think it's all Muslim.
One was a plea beforehand and one wasn't. That's, I don't remember what it was, but that's what we were taught.
I think they were both plea beforehand before, that's in my opinion. Which one did you think was better?
The metal one is worse.
Worse.
Because that was never, like, we were explained that the soda bottle, the little ring and the cleave were separate, and then they were put on. But with the metal, it was all just molded on.
Not true. Go to the factory. Not true. Not true. Question, yes? The final blow, right? Okay, it's crooked, so you can sew with it with difficulty. Mm-hmm. Now you straighten it out, you can sew with ease. So Mr. Brewer called that back of the passage. Yeah, maybe he's saying it's bone, not back of the passage. Maybe you're right. But I'm just laying with the one that says that little staple. Shomer Shabbat. Very nice. So, okay. Now we have to pick up the loose pieces, all the other kinds of traps that we haven't spoken about yet. If I leave it, please ask now. Yes. It was never there. It was never open. All these things are done the same way. They make it one top, but they then give a little bit of a zets, a bang, which loosens it in that place, so now it can be easily come off. Do you think that thing was separate one time? It was never separate.
No, I thought it was a fact, but that opening
would be a good. It wasn't broken before. It was made that way. Not only is it broken. I don't believe it was a clean before. I keep saying it was a clean beforehand because it was made to preserve it, not a different kind of thing to drink from it. Where does it say, that's my big question, where does it say you can't change a cleave from cleave A to cleave B? I haven't found such a prohibition. a non-kli to a kli, I understand, both and not going to accomplish. A non-functioning kli or malfunctioning kli to a proper functioning kli, we'll call that not going to accomplish. It's functioning perfectly. It's a different function. I don't see any prohibition in that. Show me. That's why I think it's permissible. Any more questions? Well, let's not go through the Rav Nishmir Shabbos, you know, line by line. This is a famous, famous chapter. He said, ideally you should open everything before Shabbos. Everything before Shabbos. Good. He says, a can which you use to put other things in subsequently may not be opened on Shabbos. So you empty all the contents and you put something else into it, should not be opened on Shabbos. Why? Because Chazal is, she made it to a kli. That assumes that you tackled the kli when it was in a sealed state. No. Again, I told you I don't really understand it, but okay. Again, it's worth being back before. Even though not everyone agrees to it. But what about the more common case? Tell me, is there any can that you open on Shabbos that you reuse something else afterwards? Anything? Is there? Okay. Ah, kindergarten. You get a note every once in a while. Please have your child bring in. That's once in a year, but that's once in a year. Right?
Okay.
So don't do that one on Shabbos. But very uncommon. Really, very uncommon. Now, what if you don't reuse it? Once you finish it, it's thrown out. Still, the Shemir Shabbos says it's better not to do it, since the custom is to hold its contents there after you open it. And again, it's afraid of bone. And you shouldn't open it, even if you personally throw it out right away. Since many people keep it at least for a while the contents are still there, then it's a problem. Now, we said before that most people throw two things when they open up, they have to take it all right away. Things may have changed, at least in America, as opposed to Eretz Yisrael. But let's say other kinds of cans, you leave the stuff at least until it finishes the meal. Then you throw it out, he prohibits it. Yes? Good. The model is that orange juice cans aren't cans. They're made from cardboard with a strip on top, which is a completely different issue, nothing to do with cans. Luckily, you're right. If you had a metal, if you had the old years, a metal can with a classical can opener for an orange juice can, it would be a problem because they tell you that three times, you know. Never knows that. Forget about that. Alright. So you're right, it shouldn't open up. Tuna fish cans. Shouldn't open up. Milk bags. My milk bag, we'll come to the bag situation later. Milk containers, well, carton, it's cardboard, right? I think so. Has paper sealed with glue on top. Example to put in, keep bread fresh, so you're right. Matzah, a box of matzahs, says, all this kind of stuff you shouldn't open on Shabbos, ideally. But there are those who are lenient, and if they're lenient, so it's not so terrible. Based on the discussion we had earlier, as long as you don't plan to reuse it after you throw out its contents, and you don't make a specialized opening, then there's grounds to be lenient, as we discussed earlier. And he comes up with his famous idea of making a hole in the bottom, as we discussed earlier. Make a hole in the bottom, it's no problem. And then he's right. If he's concerned primarily with Chazon Ish, Bona, then you make a hole in the bottom, that means he's correct. But those who worry about Soser, then it wouldn't necessarily be a factor. As he mentioned earlier. Or he mentions, as someone in class mentioned before, you take it open it halfway, make it crooked, and you take it out right away. Similar idea. You never make it into a, what he calls a clean code, as he suggests. He has what I said to you before. Oh, that if you throw it out immediately, For example, you have these small sugar packets. You know what I'm saying? They're in the cafeteria. Sugar, salt. It's made for one use and in the garbage right away. He says, everyone agrees it's permissible to open it on Shabbos. Everyone agrees. Why isn't it salsa? Talk about salsa. You know, he's consistent. You worry about salsa, it's a problem, it seems to me. But again, I told you, don't have to be so worried about salsa. But I said that everyone agrees it's permissible. To my mind, it's somewhat of an overstatement. There's also another problem with these kind of things. Letters. It's to try to avoid some of them have letters. Every little square millimeter has a letter on it. You know, what are you going to do? And it also says they shouldn't cut it on a place where it's made to be cut. It's what's called machate. Maybe. Maybe. Not. Okay, this is what he says. Then he says, one second, you can't make a pretty opening, like a triangle can opener for the pineapple juice, or the spout of the milk container. This is prohibited, because it's what's called a nekev yofer. Okay, this is a summation of the first four pages here of this chapter. Now I'll take your question. Yes? The Shavuot is also prohibited.
But
I thought it's still there on that. Right, but the Shavuot, that's only by Torah law, by rabbinic law, even if the Shalom, it might still be prohibited.
I remember
learning
that, like, if you have
prayer. I happen to be of an agreement that many posts can say that, I thought everyone would agree, that should agree, there's no sphere of the Kevin, but there are them. The rules are set against us, so we need to try to feel ideally to worry about his position.
So if we have to open up a package of napkins.
Oh, we'll come to that. Now, get the following case. Have a tapping of what he calls a shokalada. Permitted to remove the wrapper of the chocolada. He writes, chocolada. But you should try to avoid tearing the letters. And you should try to ruin the wrapping. So it should not be usable again. The same would apply to other more common cases like potato chips come in a bag, right? Plastic, I don't think it's called potato chips yet. They come in a bag. But the best way to do it would be to open it in a way that it's unusable. And it presumably would apply to napkins. Now, strictly speaking, based on our discussions from earlier, it might be permissible to open it any way you please. It's better to make it unusable. You see, if you make it unusable, on the one hand, he doesn't discuss any nuance over here. You're not making it into a kli, it was a kli beforehand. So, if you consider it to be a kli beforehand, so once you break it, so it's made the possibility of soser exists. If you're going to be lenient and say it's not soser, so, first glance, there should be any reason why I have to make it unusable. I don't have an initial opinion when it comes to canned applies to potato chips. That's a strong seal, much weaker. So, to napkin, plastic bag, etc. All these things, napkin, paper cups, everything should be open to Chatzilah before Shabbos. And if you don't, so you got this ground to permit opening it up on Shabbos as well. Can you open it? That's right now. Don't open it at the place where it is. And I was looking it over before. He said when you open these things, it shouldn't be meant to be open. Saki yot. Yes. Tov lo la'afrit b'mokom ha'nidbach. That's what he writes. Better not to open it at that place. Better just open it somewhere else. You know, if you have potato chips, just instead of opening at the top with glue, just take a hand or a knife and just cut off the whole thing. That'll make it less usable for later, and so that's the less shadows of it's called Niyoros Dubuki, which we'll discuss as we go next few weeks. As in the same, the very next footnote, it's really not so bad, but it's made to be undone at that point. Nashal Kayama, not made to be there forever, it's made to be opened by the consumer. Better in the case of the whole series of footnotes which are very long. Now I can't find everything I was looking for. Very long. So here is what about Isur Korea. That's the problem. You don't care if Korea to get that Isur. Korea means to rip. So to rip, to separate glued papers is a prohibition of ripping. And to rip the whole paper itself might be a lesser prohibition of ripping. Conceivably. You're not separating two things, you're just ripping one thing. According to some authorities, it's more lenient. As we said earlier, as he quotes over here, whatever is made to surround the food is considered secondary to the food, and it's no issue of ripping. That's along the lines of our measures of logic from before. So, that's what he says. Okay, now we have to cover, we have a few more minutes to go, because I have to catch a van. But we have to discuss a few, what can I do? I have to catch a few more. Here's an unbelievable chumra over here. The Shemir Shabbos prohibits tie arms.
Twist ties.
What do you call them?
Twist ties.
Twist ties. You can't tie them, you can't untie them. If you don't believe me, here is I'll read it to you. Asur lelafek chut barzel or seret plastic. That's what he writes. Why? Believe it or not. He considered it to be braiding and unbraiding. You can't, it's like you have a, you can't take strings and make them into a thread, make them into a string. Here too, you take pieces, you braid them together. It's like making it into a thicker string. That's his reason. Many others argue with him, but since he says it, we try to avoid it. How do you avoid it? Well, just don't do it. But what if you want to eat the stuff that was there from before Shabbos? Simple. Take the plastic and start pulling. Just pull. Pull on the bag. Pull, just keep pull. What's going to happen at the end is the entire lifuf, the entire twist tie, the width, will go off with half the plastic. And then it'll open up on the other side. You don't. That's where to close things on Shabbos. We'll get the details of knots later. It's just taken go around and around and around and around and around. And why the challah out of it? So the weight will be. Yeah, right, yeah, the challah. Go around and around. And just put it that way. You know, the best kind of way to close things on Shabbos are the kind of clothes that you buy with, I'm sorry to use the expression, with the garbage cans, which have the niches. You ever see those? Niche. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. You pull the various niches. That's hetagum. That's no knot, and no this, and that's nothing. We specialize in going to a new industry with the Shabbos closures. Now with the baggies, the big baggies. But the big problem is that people who want to throw out the garbage on Shabbos, they find knots in the garbage can. That's a no-no. That's really making us kosher. Serious problem.
Right?
Clips?
No, like... this
is
really... Yeah, like
it clips
then.
I don't see why not. That's the same kind of an idea. Seems to me. Oh. How about the juice cans? The juice boxes? You have to take a straw and you go... I think that's permissible. Because there, it's not a specialized opening, it's just a piece of tin foil and anyway, they never covered up the thing completely. That's because it's a tin foil. You go, and you close it, and you make a hole in it. I don't think it's any problem at all.
So
right, but a lot of the oranges have that now. Yes. I'm not sure if that's true. I guess it's going to be a match, but the best thing is to open it and throw out all the contents right away. Questions? It's hard to give a definitive answer. I guess it's better if you eliminate it. You can view that as a clean. I guess you can do it. As opposed to a napkin, you wouldn't consider the plastic around the napkin to be a clean. It's just there. had no hook, where the potatoes might be used as a cleaver, maybe. So therefore, it'd be better to throw it all just to empty it out right away. You're right, better. There's much more to talk about, but my van's about to leave. We all did it, we're way behind. That's what we're going to get us. I mean, only just one little chapter today. It was a very important chapter. Perikes. This is the next week. We'll do Perikyud, Yudala, Jibayz. We'll start with a couple of... Wrong to go in order. We could talk about other things too, but that's the general theme. I would very much like to cover a significant amount of ground now so we can depose poise, I should say, to begin a major another for next month, next term. So let's begin without further ado, Perek Yud, which is talks about the ice and the refrigerator. Kerach HaMakarer. There is a problem which we'll be discussing at length next term called Mukta. And Mukta has a subdivision known as Nolad. Nolad is something which is created from scratch or according to some a change of state. And there are more who Ashkenaz to follow rules. If something changes state from solid to liquid, it's called Nolad. And therefore, it is a subcategory of muksa. For this reason, if a person puts ice in a plate and the ice all melts, and they left the plate full of water, that water, according to the Ramah, is categorized as muksa. It should not be drunk on Shabbos, can't even move it around on Shabbos. However, if the ice is put into a drink, put of the drink. So you want to use ice on Shabbos the proper way, to put the ice into a drink direct. You want to have a bowl of ice in the middle of the table, so you shouldn't leave it there for very long. If you leave it there for a short period of time, you'll be able to use it for its proper use before the ice begins to melt. If there's water left in the bottom, that water really should be left there, or moved in a manner which you can move, which we'll be discussing next term. There are a lenient view, the Shulchan Aruch is lenient in this matter. He's firing. Liquid to a solid. Well, not that common, but today very common. You make ice cubes on Shabbos. Halachah l'maaseh, you use up all your ice cubes for the night, and you want to have more ice cubes for Shabbos lunch. And you put the water into the freezer, and it comes into ice cubes on Shabbos. Once again, a change of state. You start from some liquid to solid. And what many authorities say it should not be done. Others disagree. liquids to a solid. Well, not that common, but today, very common. You make ice cubes on Shabbos. You use the boiler ice cubes Friday night, and you want to have more ice cubes for Shabbos lunch, and you put the water into the freezer, and it comes into ice cubes on Shabbos. Once again, a change of state. You start from some liquid to solid. I think what many authorities say it should not be done. Others disagree. They solid to liquid is considered to be no level, not from liquid to solid. Whatever reason, I'm going to go into details. There are other potential prohibitions about making ice, and therefore the bottom line is, fried with wood. Try enough ice made in advance before Shabbos begins. The shots at clock, a difficult situation. It's a very difficult situation. So even rely on Shulchan Aruch, who says even ice to water is not a problem. Against the rabbi. This is a somewhat difficult situation that you can rely upon the additional view for the Shulchan Aruch and others that from liquid to solid, from ice, from water to ice, would be permissible even according to the Ramah. Consider it somehow a negative change. That's what the Shulchan Aruch Zalman quoted here is saying. Moreover, Shlomo Zalman goes further and says the entire prohibition in either direction is limited to water and ice, ice and water. But other liquids, which are in a frozen state, he claims there's no prohibition of nolens whatsoever. For example, you sometimes have soup or other things which are soup is not such a good example. It's usually you heat up the soup, which you can't do on Shabbos, but other things are frozen, and then you defrost them on Shabbos. So, Shlomo Zalman rules, he thinks it's not a problem of Dola at all. Everyone agrees with him, but this is his opinion. Yes? Well, orange juice concentrate would be a better situation, because in the orange juice concentrate, you put the orange juice into, well, what order you use. It's pretty hard. You put the water in either before or right afterwards. So it melts into the water. That we said before is not a problem. So even ice can melt into water, so certainly the concentrate. That's less of a problem. Juice pops. Make orange juice into orange ice. Well, question would be, according to what Shlomo Zalman says, that he says that water is changes to ice and has certain ramifications, rules of ritual purity or impurity, as opposed to milk, for example. Even if it's frozen, it would still be considered to be in this category of a mash. That being the case, the question is, what about ice pops, made of orange juice or something of that nature? Really hard for me to know. I'm not sure, I'm not an expert in these matters about tumor, what ice pops you consider. So, I mean, Rav Shlomo Zalman himself even forbids you to make regular ice. But the question, even if you follow the more strict view, you cannot make regular ice, what about make ice pops? Could be permissible, I'm not sure. Within that view, you cannot make ice, I'm not sure about ice pops. It's orange juice, I'm not sure orange juice is like soup, or orange juice is like water, it's a little between. I'm not sure. When it comes to the orange juice concentrate, there's another significant problem. Who has time to wait till the orange juice kind of melts into the water? I think it's 3 hours. No, how long till it takes to melt it? Hard as a rock. What do you usually do on Tuesday? You make, what do you do? Press down on it. Are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? May not be considered a prohibition, which is a lengthy halachic discussion. There is an interesting periodical that comes out called, I think it's called something Shabbos. Someone knows what the publication is called. Something Shabbos put out by, I think it's Aguda or somebody. They have it there. Maybe once in a while they come out with a journal. And it was an entire article they devoted to prohibiting making apple or orange juice concentrate by pressing down on the juice as it comes out of the can. And I wrote an article explaining why I think it's okay. Because I thought that it's done, it's commonly done, it's there, all the Jews are sinning, but I don't like that too much. So I found a reason why perhaps to be mutter according to the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. And there's no prohibition, not of Nolad, because it's come kicked into the water. It's not the prohibition of what we call Sita. So you're crushing the hard matter and converting it into a liquid, according to what we see Paschim. It's a process that's not easy to see to either, because it's not like an orange, which we spoke about earlier in the past. It's just, you're just really crushing it. You're not really squeezing anything out of anything else. That's what we thought, Lala. Okay. Because it's not a problem on other foods, as we discussed earlier, if you have soup left over, this happens very commonly. You have soup left over for a night, you want to freeze it. See, pass until you're permitted to put it into the freezer to let it, so that it shouldn't spoil or shouldn't, whatever, shouldn't be left out. This is an interesting question we're not going to get to until next term, for those who will still be here. That's something called Hakhana. You're not supposed to prepare from Shabbos to Sunday, or for Monday, or for next Shabbos. So how can you put the soup into the freezer if it's going to be used in the subsequent day? The answer is that they get ruined otherwise. As we will discuss at length then, it's not considered to be Hakhana if the alternative is going to be ruined. By contrast, a person may not remove food from a freezer on Shabbos because he wants to defrost for use in Motzoi Shabbos. That's called Hakhana. Okay. Now we go to a very important question. Important in its own right, and it's important that we learn certain rules from it. And that is, are you allowed to open the refrigerator in the first place on Shabbos? You would assume it's a refrigerator, huh? Well, if something goes on or off immediately, such as a light, that's terrible. That's a very bad thing. You may not have a light, in a refrigerator. If you have one, you should detach it before Shabbos, and if your refrigerator forgets, detach it, period. In our house, there's no light in the refrigerator. Finished. But also, some refrigerators, when you open the door, a fan goes off. The fan is there to blow the air around and around, to circulate it, but when you open the door, you're afraid that the cold air will blow out. It'll use up more electricity. So the fan goes off as soon as you open the door. That's also a big problem. The minute you open the door, some kind of electronic circuit is starting or stopping, and that's, we assume that's not permitted. We work with an assumption that the start or stop of an electrical circuit in an immediate fashion is prohibited for one reason or another. I should already mention now what some of the reasons are given because it's important for our next discussion. The famous opinion of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish feels that the completion of an electric circuit in Isim and HaTorah called Bonet. You're creating, you're building something. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had a lengthy treatise, which is printed on the separate cover, and also in the same book, Sefer Ben Shlomo. Said no, he thinks that it's completing an electric circuit is not considered to be in the category of bonus. Bonus means you're building something. Closing a circuit, argues Rabbi Auerbach, is not building anything. It's like opening and closing a door. Everything is there before you have to fix anything. It's just, literally like opening and closing a door. You're not building, not fixing. It wasn't broken beforehand. I mentioned that same logic last week. If it's broken, then it's fixing it. Not broken, you're not considered fixing it. So you go open and close the door, it's not fixing. And if you complete electric circuit, it's not fixing. It wasn't broken beforehand. On the contrary, electrical part which never turns off, that's broken. And then it's going to wear itself down, it'll blow out. It has to have the ability to turn it on and off. In order to be considered work properly. That's his opinion. And there's a lengthy discussion, which I don't plan to go into in all the details. Suffice to say, my study of this topic, it seems to me, and the majority of authorities agree with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and the Raya of the Chazon Ish to be refuted, it seems to me. and therefore that's the majority of you. It was a minority chadish, the minority of you. And the minute you open and close the circuit, it's an Yisrael vote. Even though both authorities deny it being a voter, they still concede that it is some kind of prohibition, probably a rabbinical prohibition. I'm not sure what it is, some kind of a rabbinical prohibition. Shlomo said maybe it's if you're afraid that if you use electric appliances, the next thing you do is use electric lights. Electric lights is prohibited, that's what's called fire. Aish, we assume. So then they prohibited all electrical appliances because it'll be confused with electrical lights. That's his angle. There are other angles which could be taken on this matter. Now here you go, you have a refrigerator, you open the door. What happens to those times you open the door? Hot air comes in. What happens when hot air comes in? Well, the thermostat in every refrigerator. Because of the hot air impact on the thermostat, and that causes the motor to go on at an earlier time than it would go on otherwise. Had you not opened the door, would have gone on in 10 minutes, not would have gone on in 5 minutes. Is that considered a violation of Yisrael Shabbos? So some say, another important term, that's called grummo. It's Rabbi Arbach writes. It's called grummo. What does grummo mean? It's only a cause. I didn't put the motor on. I didn't press a button to put the compressor of the refrigerator on to have that whole mechanism work to make the air colder in the cavity of the refrigerator. I didn't do that. All I did was open the door. As a result of my opening the door, so hot air came in, that impacted on the very sensitive thermostat, so now the motor will go on 5 minutes early. It's a big deal. That's only a grummo. Now, we have to analyze grummo for a moment. Grummo means something which only causes a malacha. The Gemara is explicit. If you're only causing a malacha, it's not prohibited. Most of those tasaka malacha, we'll read it in the Sars of Astia is Usur and Grama is Mutter. That's what the Gemara says, Mutter. However, the Ramah Pasuk is La'alacha, that Grama is Usur, unless it's a Makam Tzorah, unless it's a Shasatka. So the context of the Gemara which permits Grama is to put out a fire. I'll give you the exact case of the Gemara, it's important to know the case. A fire was burning and they were afraid it would go out of control. The Gemara tells us you can't put out the fire unless it's pikuach nefesh. What you can do is you can encircle the fire with barrels of water. So when the fire moves, and ultimately hits the barrels of water, the barrels will break open and the water from the barrels will extinguish the fire. That's permissible. So the Rambam says, of course that's permissible. But there it's a shasat chak, it's a difficult scenario, a difficult situation. So then Rambam's book. Just like this, for no reason whatsoever, he feels that grummo should be prohibited at the level of the rabbon. So here too, even assuming that your opening the refrigerator is considered to be in the category of grummo, but still it's a problem, because grummo is prohibited unless it's a great need. So you can argue two ways. One, is a great need? I have to get to the food in the refrigerator. I have to eat, don't you? Two, we have all about rights in the Sefer, that the only time the rabbis prohibited grummo is if the ultimate result will be a Torah prohibition. Or at least something which is prohibited in concept in a Torah. For example, a fire will go on. Perfect example. A fire will go on as a result of what you do. That's a problem. But if what's going to ultimately transpire is not an intrinsic prohibition, such as here, the audience. What's the worst that's going to happen? The motor will go on. But the motor going on itself is not a Torah prohibition. Now it's what we call a grava for a rabbinical prohibition. So Arbach writes in the same, he thinks that a grava in the case of a rabbinical prohibition was never prohibited. The stringency of the Ramah of prohibiting a grava only applies in the case in which the ultimate end result will be a Torah prohibition. And the rabbi said, well, don't get involved in grummo either. But in the refrigerator, well, the ultimate result is the opening of the motor, which is no big deal, then that Torah is nothing. So then the grummo situation, which is gendered, when you open the refrigerator door and have the highway come in, is absolutely permissible. So all right, so Shlomo Zalman. I have to tell you, to be honest, that I'm not convinced that this is called grummo. One could draw a distinction a subtle one, but maybe perhaps a crucial one. In the case of the Gemara, where you encircle the fire with barrels of water on one hand. In the case of the refrigerator, where you open the door and hot air comes in right away and starts to impact on the thermostat on the other. And the difference is as follows. In the case of the water, what you do at that time by putting water around the fire has absolutely no impact presently on the fire. If what I do will remain where I placed it, where you'd like it to remain, and nothing else will move, nothing will happen. There will be no extinguishing of the fire. And the only reason why the fire will ultimately be extinguished is because some third force, the wind which is blowing the fire, nearer to my barrels. That's considered to be in the category of grum, that's in tomorrow's case. But over here, one could argue, this is more comparable to a different analogy. Someone wants to put out a fire. He knows it's not allowed. So he goes 50 feet away. He takes a barrel filled with water, starts to roll it. Rolls. Maybe it's a little bit of a downhill, so it'll be 100 feet away. And it starts rolling. Boom. After 5-10 minutes, it gets to the place of the fire. Comes to the fire, breaks open, the water comes out, extinguishes the fire. Is that called grumma? So my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, that sounds like that's not called grumma. Because there, all it is a delayed reaction, but it's based upon what you're doing. You are putting out the fire. Except instead of putting it out with a hose directly, so you're rolling the barrel down the hill. But that's not considered to be grumma. Grumma is where you encircle the fire with barrels. So then what leads to the ultimate extinguishing of the fire is not what you did. You're completely passive from that point on. Rather, what causes it is the fact that the fire is moving closer to the barrel. That's called grumma. This has nothing to do with you. The fire moving towards the barrel. But here, with the barrel moving to the fire, the rough thought, that's not considered to be in the category of grumma. Here, we have to analyze all these cases. For example, what happens in the situation of the refrigerator? You open the door, hot air comes in, and the minute the hot air comes in, it right away finds its way towards the thermostat. Takes a while, and it will have an impact on the thermostat, which will in turn will trigger the motor earlier than would have otherwise. So an arguable case can be made, it's not called grumma at all. That's called really a direct action, even though it's time delayed. The major dispute. However, I must tell you that in my opinion, even if the Rav is right, we can perhaps still be dealing when it comes to a refrigerator. And the reason is that, look, as I mentioned to you before, the entire prohibition of starting an electrical appliance is not exactly clear. Not like an Issa Derabbanan, which has been established for centuries, we know exactly what it means. Here it's something which the prohibition is not clear to us. As Auerbach himself writes in his tape, we don't really know why it should be prohibitive. Maybe it's prohibitive because it looks like putting on a light or whatever reason. But perhaps one could argue that since it's only a sort of a recent prohibition, which apparently was enacted for the masses by these recent generations, perhaps one could argue that it was only enacted if it's direct, by actually putting on the intellectual parts directly. But if I cause it to go on later, even if halachically it's not considered to be grumma, it's considered to be sort of a direct action, perhaps it's still permissible since it takes so long for it to happen and your hand, it's not clear that what you're doing is causing it to in fact happen or happen earlier. That's in the word, there's certain grounds to be permissive. There are also a number of other grounds to be permissive in this matter. And again, I'm mentioning these grounds not because we want to go into so much detail, because each and every one of them can have implications for other more practical cases. My attitude when I open the refrigerator door is not to put on the motor in 5 minutes rather than 10 minutes. That's not my immediate concern. What concerns me is very simple. I want to drink a Coca-Cola. The Coca-Cola is in the refrigerator. That's my concern. They open the door and take out the Coca-Cola. That's all I care about right now. Someone will stop me and say, wait a minute, that's what you care about. Don't you understand, don't you know, that because of what you're doing, the motor will go on earlier? Okay, but it's not my concern. I'm what we call a Dovar she'eino miskavein. Dovar she'eino miskavein means that Dovar she'eino miskavein means that I am intending to do action A, and action B may or may not transpire. There's a dispute in the Gemara. We pass in the halacha that it's mutter, hetter gomer. Dover Hashem and Miskavein is mutter. Not only in Shabbos, in all areas of halacha. I do action A, which is intrinsically permissible. Result B may or may not ensue. The halacha states that it's permissible for me to do action A and take my chances on B. And even if B ultimately ensues, I'm not considered to be in violation, because it wasn't inevitable. The problem is, here perhaps it really is inevitable. Perhaps when I open the refrigerator door, it's inevitable that the motor will go on earlier than it would otherwise. If that would be the case, what would we call that? Anyone know the expression? Sic ratio. What does sic ratio mean, literally? I'll cut off its head. What do you mean cut off its head? The Gemara's example is, I want a toy for plaything for my child. So a chicken's head would be very nice. They say, I want to cut off a chicken's head on Shabbos. Not allowed to do it. Why not? Because the animal's going to die. I don't want the animal to die. I only want the chicken's head. As far as I'm concerned, let the animal live. Let the bird live. I don't care. But we know one thing. I'm going to cut off the head of the chicken. The chicken's not going to live. No way. So therefore, that's called sick ratio of loyomus. You're going to cut the head off. It's not going to die. It's possible. What that means is, that it's a prohibition which the Gemara says everyone agrees to, sic ratio. And therefore, here too, one might argue that perhaps when I open the refrigerator door and Hadei comes in, it's inevitable that the motor will go on earlier as a result of my actions. Well, there were three ways out of that problem. Three ways. One is that the facts aren't true. It's not inevitable. You may ask, but you studied the science that it is inevitable. So I don't know, I'm not much of a scientist, but I got to tell you something I read in one of the Svarim, which said that, you know what the worst thing is? This bothered me so much for so many years. Sometimes you open the refrigerator, and guess what? The second you open the refrigerator, the motor goes on. Oh, no. What bad luck. Just the split second that I open up, the motor goes on, I feel so terrible. If I open it up, and then I close it up, and it goes on 5 minutes later, I'm long gone. But the minute I open up, boom, the motor goes on. I feel so terrible when that happens. So I read in one of the Svarim which indicates that you should feel great when that happens. Why should you feel great when that happens? Because they claim in the Sefer, you can ask your local refrigerator man, that if the motor goes on right away, that's proof positive that it has nothing to do with your opening the refrigerator. Because it takes a minute from the time that you open the door and the Hadei starts to come in till it can even have any impact on the thermostat. So quite the contrary, if you open it and a second later the motor goes on and you can make a kiddush, now you know for sure that the motor going on has nothing to do with your actions. That's what I read in, I believe, in Rav Shlomo Zalman's sefer. If that is the case, still today with today's high technology, if that's the case, then I think we can get around the problem in the following way. It's not a sic ratio. It's not inevitable that your opening the door and allowing Hayat to come in will cause the motor to go on earlier. What we're saying now is a minute delay. What if the motor goes on within that minute, as often happens? Then it would have gone on just as early without your opening the door, as your open the door has no impact on when it goes on. So therefore, when I open the door, I have no idea what's going on with the thermostat. But there's a significant chance it'll go on in the first minute. If that happens, it's nothing to do with my opening the door, because it would happen anyway. So maybe it's not a situation in the first place. Yes?
Is there anything wrong with trying to stay on longer?
Many posts can say no. There's nothing wrong with letting it stay on long. And there are, therefore, there are certain poskim or paintings that sell poskim this way, and many others, some others, that you should only open the refrigerator while the motor is going. And then you're not causing it to go on. It may stay on long, but you're not causing it to go on. Yes. Why would it be a problem? I can tell you why it's a problem. It's because of your action. The motor is going on long. It's your fault, and the motor lasts goes on 3 minutes instead of 2 minutes, whatever it may be. Well, okay. So that's how most of you're right. You're just prolonging. But it's not so simple. It's not obvious. Well, it's not 100% obvious. There are rabbanim who in fact follow this rule. Yes. Once you shut the door of the refrigerator, what's not a problem? Good question. How can you shut the refrigerator door if you left it open the whole Shabbos, the motor going on and on and on and on? Now that you close it, you cause the motor to go off early. That's a good question. A very good question. I thought of that really better. How do you let even those machmirim who say you should only open the refrigerator when the motor is going, how will they close the refrigerator? The minute you close it, you're causing the motor to go off earlier than it would have gone off had you just left it open all Shabbos. I would have been on all Shabbos if close to it. That's a good question. Can you think about that for a second? Perhaps they view the stopping of the motor as more lenient than the starting of the motor, which one could justify based on a variety of reasons. Start the motor, that's considered possibly the Rabbanan, or maybe even Kiradin. Where then, if you stop the motor, it's not so strict. Maybe there's a their logic, and I worry about that part. Yes? Could be a similar to? Could be. That could happen. It could really happen in real life. The whole group of people come into your house, and there's a guy on the door, so he quickly jumps in, and then, okay, everybody come through, quick, come through. And then as soon as, that what happens.
Then you're causing it to close.
And then you go off the plate, so you stay there all the time, there's no problem. Or your company, you wait until someone else comes, and you jump off with him.
Jump off with him.
I don't know, because then you're causing the, that's severe, it's happening immediately. That's worse. That's a problem. For long, it may not be a problem, but stepping away when there's no one else there might be a problem. See, they stop. Freeze. Someone else comes. We'll shoot out. When he takes his first step, you jump away. And then he's keeping it open, and he will jump away later. Will in effect close the door. Better that way. It happens. Okay, we got a little bit of a digression. So I told you one possible leniency that is not of segregation for the fact that first minute theory is accurate. Second possibility, there are some who rule, this is in a category called segregation alone nichole. You may have heard that expression. Segregation alone nichole means that you are doing something, yes, but the result B, which is inevitable, you're doing action A. Result B, which is inevitable, is of no concern to you. You don't really care about it. You don't really care about it. So the segregation is the low nichole. Low nichole doesn't mean you opposed it. You don't have no neutral. You don't really gain from it. It's not really your concern. Now, yes? Oh, so that's what I was waiting for that question. Of course you care. If you don't, if the motor won't go on, then all the food in the fridge will start to spoil. Then you don't care. But there are some who wrote this following trick. It's hard to believe. Since you want the motor to go on, but you don't want the hale to come in. You don't want the hale to come in, so it's called low nichole.
Then you open the door?
Right, you open the door to the fridge. You don't want the air to come in. Some view that to be as a kind of segregation of the low nichole. I also agree with you. Look at the Me'iri, it's a complicated story, but this is true enough. But some suggest that, the segregation of the low nichole. which again I have trouble swallowing for your reason, but apparently some say it is considered money for like the final result you want, but the in-between stage is causing that final result for which you do not want. That's a dispute. But then there's yet another pulse with possible leniency. And that is a psikresha by the Rabbanon. Shulchan Aruch rules that psikresha, regular psikresha, nichale, is prohibited only with respect to the Oraisis, but now with respect to the Rabbanon. And since we said before that opening the motor, in effect, is a prohibition, which is the Rabbanon, so if you only cause it to be open through a psikresha, perhaps you can argue that it should be permissible. True, the Mishnah Berurah doesn't say that. He argues to Shulchan Aruch, and this point is in Shin Yud Aleph. But since there's so many other people who agree to Shulchan Aruch, and it's a combination of other factors, maybe it's even called Nikolai, maybe it's permissible to be Bichlal, maybe it's only a Grama, all this is combined together, you can consider it as another point of reasoning, the segregation by the Rabbanim. So, to my mind, it's permissible to open the refrigerator even if the motor is not on. We do it in my house, we do it, we don't worry about it. Those who are more strict, okay. So, can't fault them. Yes? The last point is the segregation by the Rabbanim. Perhaps segregation is only prohibited by the comes to Yisurim and Atorah. So you find that in the Gemara. Shulchan Aruch suggests that perhaps segregation by the Rabbanim is b'chlal permissible. Period. Now all these rules are going to come back time and time again, so you better know it now. Yes?
In terms of what we're talking about before, defrosting different foods, if you open it in the freezer and a kind of food falls out that you can't use on child, like, let's say, hors d'oeuvres that come with the dough that you have to cook, is it b'chlal?
You bet it's b'chlal.
So you can't pick it up.
Big problem. It's a big problem.
When is the food going to get spoiled?
That's the problem. I mean, you open our freezer, there's tons of stuff, and the stuff you want is behind other stuff. The stuff in front is raw chicken.
Right.
Raw chicken is booked on Shabbos. It serves no function. So you gotta reposition things in the freezer before Shabbos.
But if it fell on the floor, what do you do? Can you pick it up? Just put
it
on
the side? I think so. Maybe the way the tricks to avoid books. Oh, but then you have to wait until next turn. I'm not gonna give away anything. No, it'll be otherwise next turn. I'm not gonna give away any tricks now. Next turn we'll go about all the tricks, how to get around books. But I'm not going to give it away now. This is therefore this big dispute about refrigerator. It's a matter of major dispute. And the different rabbanim have different positions. But the rules, the logic behind the various positions is also critical for other situations. I should add that a similar discussion appears concerning water coolers. Water coolers. You press a button, water comes out, and at some later time, enough water is empty that the rest of the water becomes hot, and it's the thermostat, and boom, the motor goes on. The same idea, basically, as the refrigerator. A possible difference would be, what if you run through an entire, you start filling up 10 pitchers within a row with a water cooler. If that means that it's basically inevitable that the water will go on directly because of your action. That would be accomplished leaving the refrigerator door open for 15 minutes. Both of these things are really should be avoided. That's why I should be careful. Like a camp sometimes, you use a water cooler. So if they use a water cooler, just, you know, press the button down and then you're going to get a little cup of water. So I mean, you stop. So, no one leaves it off for so long that it should be a situation. Then they turn around, they start using the water cooler with the pitchers. One pitcher, and then so there's another pitcher. And they don't have the tooth, they have to open the two spigots and push this one and push this one, and it's on straight the whole time. And then as a result of their combined actions, it's just about inevitable the motor's going to go on. And then it's one waiter. If you're one waiter, still has all of his tables, this one person is in effect causing the motor to go on right away. That might be a little more strict. Okay. Yes. That's a water fountain. The water fountain. If the water fountain, the water is hot, it's not a problem. It's like a faucet. The tap water, that's not a problem. I have to confess that I oversimplified something. And there's a reason for it, but I want to have to come back. Now in Eretz Yisrael, they don't have too many, well, they have their, you know, I'll talk about that now. But we're a different place. So they can't get the Shabbos guy at all times. But we have, I work with how to get a Shabbos guy. Get a guy, tell him to come in, and tell him, in my opinion, tell him to open up the refrigerator. You do that in the refrigerator for me, sir? Well, just open up the refrigerator, please. Now, ordinarily, you're not permitted to tell a guy to do something you can't do. However, when it comes to a sick ratio, when you tell him to do action A, which is intrinsically permissible, and action B results, which is prohibited, it's called sick ratio. So for you, it's prohibited. But for a non a little farther.